Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kufis and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Men for the Win is sponsored by The Grand Group with Edina Realty. Are you looking to purchase a new home in the Twin Cities area? Or perhaps you're trying to sell your current home? Whether you're upsizing or downsizing, The Grand Group with Edina Realty will meet all of your housing needs. Contact The Grand Group by emailing The Gran, that's G-R-A-N, group, at edinarealty.com, or call them by phone at 612-817-8751. The Grand Group with Edina Realty, 7-time Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine Super Agent Award winners.
On this episode, David and Dan recap the Twins' 4-game series against the Chicago White Sox. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Sweep! Sweep, Dan Thompson! Thanks for tuning in to Men for the Win. My name is David Kufis. With me, as always, is Dan Thompson. If you didn't hear it, folks, sweep!
It feels like they didn't do this last year. I didn't go back because the spreadsheet page is hidden, so I can't tell in our notes from last year. But no, a sweep of a 4-game series that it was in doubt a couple times. How rough must it be to play for the Chicago White Sox right now?
I would think it's a hard time, Dan, because every headline on every sports page in America right now talks about how the White Sox have fallen all the way down to 3-22. Only 3 victories after 25 games, Dan.
And I don't have it's not like I feel bad for them. I don't know. I feel bad for them in the sense that these are professionals who are not really tied to this franchise in any emotional way and in the way that fans are, right? It's a different connection. But I do feel, to take some of these losses, you know, if it wasn't to the Twins, I would feel really bad for them. But the Twins needed this. They're 11-13 now. They're 6.5 back in the standings. You know, to be only 2 under 500 feels like that's a manageable hole to dig out of.
Yes, and if you look at Cleveland's schedule, I'm sorry, I know the Twins have an easy strength of schedule, but one of the reasons why the schedule is so easy is because they're playing AL Central opponents. The Guardians have had a far easier schedule thus far than the Twins have. To circle back, the Twins did have a couple of sweeps, Dan. So they had 2 3-0 sweeps against the Royals, a 3-0 sweep against the Athletics, a 3-0 sweep against the White Sox, and a 2-0 sweep against the Brewers. Can you believe it or not?
Yeah, but 2-0 sweeps don't count. You know, That's not a big enough sample size. That's why I put that one last.
I didn't do it chronologically. I did that one last.
But, you know, the Twins still have to play the Guardians, 10 more times? Because they had the third game rained out early on. So we'll see. The next time they see them, it looks like, is in mid-May. And that's actually away again. So we'll see how they go. But, hey, a series sweep, a 4-0 series sweep, that feels good. I think we should just go ahead and go into the recap.
Series recap.
Well, Dan, this one started the way you hoped it would start for your Minnesota Twins team. Knowing you're going against the worst team in baseball statistically, they win this one 7-0. And I think Twins fans went into this game far more nervous than they should have, because all we're thinking is, please don't let us be as bad as the White Sox are.
And welcome back, Max Kepler. He hits a 2-run double on the first pitch that he saw. And so then the Twins were able to build a 5-0 lead just in the first 3 innings. Chris Paddock is not going to win himself a Cy Young. But when you go 7 innings and you help your team do a shutout, that's got to help his confidence.
This series, Dan, was a confidence boost for the team as a whole. And I'm struggling with this. We're going to talk about this in the segments. I just don't know how happy to be about what's happened. I'm happy they swept. Don't get me wrong. I'm thrilled that they won 4 games in a row. But my goodness, is it just setting us up for a disastrous crash, Dan?
Did you recognize any names of the starting pitchers for the Chicago White Sox? I mean, these were guys off of the AAA. They're not the scrap heap from AAA. I mean, I'm sure these are big prospects for them, but like Jonathan Cannon, like I had no idea who this guy was. Second career start for the White Sox. He goes 3-2/3, 9 hits, 6 earned runs. So yeah, I'm happy that they did this, but they ought to have, I suppose.
No, hell, they've got it backwards. Tell them to turn it around.
I don't know anything about reverse splits with his stats. I haven't looked at them. But you said cannons, Dan, and I think pirates, of course.
Okay, I was wondering what the connection was there. A lot of good things happened here. Eddie Julian goes 3-for-4, including his 5th home run. It was his first pulled home run of the season, which you're attributing this to the warm weather?
I am. I do think that Eddie's Canadian roots, as we've learned, he doesn't play well in the cold for whatever reason. But the warm weather, Dan, he loosens up. He can really swing the bat.
Oh, Canada.
Do you remember, Dan, the last guy who we had on the team who hit a lot of opposite field home runs?
Joe Mauer.
Like, it just feels like I sort of teed that one up for you.
That is who you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, yeah, and they were always short left field, right? Like, that's how his home runs went. And that's why once they moved to target field, his home run numbers dropped so significantly. Because they didn't have that really, really short porch in the Metrodome.
A couple other good things about this. Everybody except Miranda and Martin get a hit, but they do better later. Twins only struck out 6 times in this game. This was a positive development, a positive theme throughout the series. And we see the debut of this season of Ronnie Henriquez, who was clearly brought up because they didn't trust Chris Paddock to make it very far in this game. He cleans up with the last 2 innings and then is later sent down to make room for game 4 starter Simeon Woods Richardson.
We do have to note, I know that you already mentioned Paddock, but he did have 10 strikeouts, and these are still MLB guys. Like, they're MLB guys. They're not MLB all-stars.
Yeah.
But still 10 strikeouts, Dan, that's something to be happy about.
But like, all I could think of through the series was, this White Sox team is going to get no hits, or there's going to be a perfect game this year against the White Sox. Like, because this team, just, there's no names on there. What, Gavin Sheets is kind of, and I realize they do have some established guys, but like, this is the kind of lineup, this is an Oakland A's lineup playing in Chicago is what it looked like to me.
I don't even know that you can say that, because like, Oakland A's at least have put some thought into the guys that they brought in for their low payroll. Like, Chicago White Sox are like, I guess this is what we have.
This is the first time, you have a note here, this is the first time in Major League Baseball history that a team has been shut out for the 8th time in their first 22 games.
Can you imagine, Dan, if you went to 8 Twins games at Target Field and the Twins scored 0 runs?
Terrible. Just terrible. Let's go on here to game 2, because if there was one downside to the series, and we'll talk more about Pablo Lopez later, but it was his performance. He just didn't look like himself. His velocity was down. I'm going to say the full word. Rocco and Pablo said there was no injury. And in the end, the Twins are still able to win what was the most exciting game of the series, 6-5.
I don't quite understand what Pablo was saying when they were asking about this. He said it was really just a lack of conviction. And I was like, I didn't know how to like interpret that. Like, you weren't committing to the pitches you were throwing, or like, you weren't convicted you could pitch? I don't know what he's meaning there, Dan.
I think it's probably the former, the first thing you said, right? He didn't have the faith that he could make the throws that he needed to make. Maybe it was just a blip, but we'll see. Because here's the thing, the White Sox looked pretty good in this game all over. They take the lead in the top of the fourth. A bad pickoff attempt after a single by Pablo Lopez. And then Eloy Jimenez gets a 3-run homer to make it 3-1 Sox. But from there, for the most part, the damage is limited. Nice play by Santana at first, making a catch in the top of the fifth, kind of reaching into the netting and kind of falling into it. The kind of play, do you think Kirilov can make that play?
I don't know. I've seen that guy chase some fly balls in the wrong direction, Dan. So to make that play, I think, is probably a bit of a stretch for Alex.
Well, and it was a good series in the end. Again, a confidence boost for everybody, because Carlos Santana had a pretty decent series. It does get a little dicey later. It's at the top of the eighth. Jay Jackson gives up a couple runs, though one is actually credited to Okert. That makes it 5-2 White Sox. But David, you should take us through the heroics at the end of this baseball game.
Yeah, so it's bottom eight, and it should be noted, the Timberwolves are playing a postseason game, or I suppose a playoff game, directly across the street from Target Field. As the Twins game is coming to a close, the Timberwolves have won. So it's the eighth inning for the Twins, and a lot of people, it seemed, somehow got into Target Field. I don't know if there was some secret passageway or if they just allowed people to come in, but I saw a couple of different people on Twitter be like, I left the Wolves game and just went over to the Twins game. And I'm like, they don't really let you do that. Typically, you can't just like walk in the eighth inning.
I think they do. Why not? You know, it's the eighth inning. The upper deck's not even open yet. Let them in, right? Let them in and cheer
suppose,
on. Because it was, an exciting finish here. In the bottom of the eighth, Larnach hits a big 2-run home run, makes it 5-4. I don't understand why they keep throwing fastballs, but then that was what the White Sox did kind of all series.
We'll talk more about that later, but yeah, so Larnach with the big 2-run shot to bring the Twins within one, so it's 4-5 headed into the ninth. Byron Buxton steps up to the plate, and Dan, you foreshadowed, you called last episode that Byron Buxton has to hit a home run at some point, doesn't he?
You are the chosen one!
And here he comes up to the plate, bottom of the ninth, hits a laser shot to left field, bounces off the foul pole, Dan, so it ties it 5-5, and then it's a weird series of events, sort of, because Santana walks on a bad pitch, like he shouldn't have walked, is sort of the moral of that story. But then Jeffers has this weird, like he sort of wanted to hold back on the swing. It's like a 2/3 swing, so it would have been a call to strike, but he makes contact and it drops down the left field line for a double. It was like, no way did that happen. You know that clip you always see of like Ichiro basically bunting for a home
sure.
run?
Yeah,
that's sort of like the same thing. It's like, how did you get a double out of this? But anyway, so then Martin pinch runs for Santana, Vasquez strikes out, and then Kirilov hits a walk-off single, and a very exciting time, Dan, for Minnesota sports in general on that night.
Pretty dang fun. I was a little bit annoyed that Vasquez struck out there. We saw some things on Twitter, I think from Doe Park, about maybe they were going to try to squeeze in the winning run with a bunt play, which I would have loved that call. I don't mind that call in that situation, but it ends up not mattering. Kirilov, by the way, struck out in his first 4 at-bats. He was almost up to, I remember once I saw Kirby Puckett strike out 5 times in one game. So anytime time anybody does that, I think of that. But hey, yes, the Twins struck out 14 times. Yes, they made Fetty look quite good with a career high 11 strikeouts. Another one of these nameless White Sox pitchers. But in the end, we finally get the Provis call with the Twins win. Twins win, the Minnesota Twins win, which was pretty fun.
Yeah, the first time this season, Dan, and if you follow him on Twitter, he always does this, like if there's a walk-off opportunity. And okay, I like Corey Provis a lot, but he's like, I just had a feeling, and so I hit record. Baloney. I'm sorry, Corey. I love you. I love hearing your voice on the TV, but you know that you are recording every single pitch once it comes to a chance for a Twins walk-off. You can't be telling me, I just had a feeling. You know, you didn't call every single Twins walk-off, and you just happened to be able to post the video right after the
game. No, but I think he knows that we all know. I think it's kind of like inside baseball, an inside joke on the inside joke or something like that right now.
I mean, you and him must be closer than me and him are, I guess, then, dude.
Anyway, let's go on here to game three. Another Twins victory, 6-3. Twins have 13 hits in this one. They score four times in the second. And while the White Sox are able to get close, they make it 4-3. The Twins answer in the fifth. And dare we say, they kind of coast to a victory.
Joe Ryan on the mound goes six innings pitched, allows three earned runs, two home runs, which it's just so Joe Ryan. And like one of them was on a fastball, one of them was on a sweeper, but both of them were basically the same location, middle. I understand you're pitching with a 4-0 lead, Joe, but my goodness, throw it not middle. Like it can still be in the zone. It just doesn't have to be in the exact middle of the strike zone.
Yeah, he definitely does that a lot, but he got through six. But to back up to how the Twins got their runs in the bottom of the second, they found their offense early. Santana walked, Martin hit a double, Vasquez hit a single, and then Willie Castro on his birthday gets his first hit with runners in scoring position this season, and it's a home run. This was a great moment for the team. They needed this boost because you did not want to split this series. You didn't really even want to go 3 out of 4.
No, 4-0 was sort of the expectation if this team could actually show that they have a chance this season. I'm still sort of waiting for the shoe to drop, Dan. I'm trying to keep my optimism in check for when the Twins have to play a better baseball team than a historically bad White Sox team, because there are other plays, Dan, during this series that even though they won, make me wonder how good this baseball team is. So top fifth, the White Sox, they have Schumach steals third, and then he steals home. So there's one out, there's runners on first and third. There's a strikeout, so it would have been two outs, okay? It would have been first and third with two outs, but the runner is running from first to second. Vasquez decides to throw. It's a high throw, so Farmer, who's playing shortstop, you can tell is inching over because he's thinking he's going to cut off the throw and then throw back home. But the throw is like, I don't know who's going to catch it. But Yao Ming at second base wasn't going to catch that ball in order to cut it off and throw it home, Dan. But I'm thinking like Randy Johnson.
How about Carl Anthony Towns? How about somebody right down the road here?
I don't even know why I'm choosing a basketball player. There are tall baseball players. I don't know what I'm thinking here, Dan. But anyway, it's a bad throw by Vasquez, and it's a bad decision to throw that ball. You had second and third with two outs, and now you just have a guy on second, and the run is scored, and it's a close ball game at that point. Bad decision by a veteran there.
Well, especially when it's not like the Twins are having a lot of success throwing guys out. So it ends up not hurting, because in the bottom of the fifth, Kepler gets another RBI and a blooper. Kind of, again, lands in no man's land. And Vasquez has a bloop single then, so it kind of makes up for it a little bit. Kepler ends up scoring on a wild pitch, and from there the bullpen shuts it down. Three shutout innings, no hits or walks.
Well, it's great to see the bullpen do that. What was funny about this, though, Bowman comes in and his very first pitch, he hits a guy. And then the bullpen is clean for the rest of the way. But that very first pitch, Dan, they should have just thrown it away the other direction. You know, get it out of the way.
Just got to get the yips out of the way. Well, let's go to game four here. The Twins win this one again, 6-3. The White Sox have an early 2-0 lead. They get runs in the second and in the fourth. But then, and Justin Morneau, really on the broadcast, previewed this. He was talking about how in the first five innings, the Twins were starting to make some better contact. And boy, then, did they make contact in the bottom of the sixth.
The Twins tie the game with back-to-back home runs by Julian and Jeffers, and then Soroka's pulled right after that. But it did seem like a switch got flipped, Dan, that they started to see the ball really better. I don't know if maybe the sun kind of changed its position so they could see the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand a little bit better. But they're swinging the bat, and they were swinging for the fences the rest of the way, Dan.
Yeah, and then they get three more hits in a row. Larnach singled off a lefty, which I looked it up last year. He was 2-for-21 versus lefties. Obviously a limited sample size, but there you go. He gets a solid single to center. Kepler hit a single, and then Castro had an RBI. They don't get more out of that. And then we are introduced, or I guess in this sequence, we are introduced to a White Sox pitcher named Jordan Leisure. Let me tell you, David, I had to resist the urge to somehow work in a pun about this man's name. But rest assured, we're going to see him again down the road. I will have a pun for you about Jordan Leisure.
I'm can't
all
wait,
in due time, David. That's what we're going to have.
Don't worry. Take your time, Dan. We can wait on that one. But anyway, bottom of seventh, Julian hits the loftiest home run. It barely clears the left field wall, Dan. And you have a theory that it got wedged between the padding?
When it came down, it looked like it landed kind of like in a place that I didn't know existed. Like just like a place between the padding and the wall or something like that. I guess I should maybe watch it again. But it was one of those where there's no way that it looked like it was going out when he hit it. But it just kept going and going. And then in the bottom of the eighth, the Twins go back-to-back once more with Santana and Miranda, and if nothing else, that felt really good to see.
We buried the lead here a bit, Dan. So SWR making the start in place of Louis Varland, which we had predicted a while ago and probably would have liked to see a while ago. SWR, Dan, goes five innings pitched. He has six strikeouts, but he does allow seven hits, two earned runs. But still, Dan, five innings pitched and two earned runs is better than every Louis Varland start that we've had this season.
And if you're going to be that fifth starter and it looks like he's going to get another chance to keep going, that's fantastic. Another note about that, and I thought this was great, that they pushed Bailey Ober's start back a day. And so now SWR is separated from Paddock. And so at least they've kind of spread out the potential situations that they might need to eat more innings. Another bit of positive news was that Carlos Correa says that he may not need a rehab stint. He might just join them on this road trip. And so to get him back at this time when the Twins have built some momentum, the timing couldn't be a lot better.
I want to build a championship culture.
He's coming back. And I think he would have taken a rehab stint if the Twins would have been playing poor. But I think he's thinking, hey, I want to get in on this good baseball playing that we've seen for once. And my goodness, Dan, we do need to mention this bullpen. Sands, Thielbar, Stewart, not so much Okert, and then Jax shut it down. No earned runs here through the next four innings. I think the Okert experiment, Dan, might be coming to a close, or maybe there's an injury or something. But as soon as Duran and Topa come back, I think Okert's the first one to be sent down.
Yeah, and Duran may be back again as soon as this road trip. So things are looking up on the injury front.
All right, well, let's go on here, Dan, to the Puckett's Picks winner.
Catch them all, Kirby Puckett!
Puckett's Picks winner.
I really thought 10 points from Jeffers, who I took, was going to do it. But no, the listeners coming in with Trevor Larnach, who scores 13. You had Buxton, who had 7. And those three scores, Dan, good scores. I know it's a four-game series, but positive scores, it's good to see. And then Hoags took Austin Martin, who scored -2. But so why don't you go ahead and give us a season standing?
Well, so the listeners get a point. They don't get the extra half point because Julian was the team leader with 18. But now Hoags still has a lead at 3.5. David, you're tied with the listeners at 2, and I am still sitting in a distant last with 1.5 points. I haven't gotten any points since the very first series.
It's cool though, Dan, because last season at this point you'd won like 5 out of the first 8 series or something, and so now that we're all so close and now that we have that new bonus point available, I'm loving that at least we're staying close and nobody's running away with it.
It's definitely more competitive, which is good. Let's go on here to Beast versus Bench.
Beast versus Bench.
Is losing fun.
I'll start here, David, with Max Kepler. I picked him because he had 4 RBI in his first 2 games back here from a stint down in St. Paul, kind of coming back from injury. And we kind of joked, we actually asked the question last episode if he was going to be the guy to bring the offense back. I don't think that that's fair to say that exactly, but it certainly did so in game 1 to spark them immediately and take some pressure off.
Yeah, I was thinking the whole time, oh my goodness, Dan was right about this. Like Kepler must have come in with some sort of a mindset. Some sort of mindset that, hey, I need to make sure to provide some offense for this team. And you know, Dan, at the end of each of these victories, you know what Kepler hit him with in the clubhouse? Those famous feet of the famous German dancer parents, Dan.
I sure hope that that's what they play. Your pick, though, is hard to argue with yours.
Yeah, Eddie Julian. I know that not every game was great, but he did go 5-for-12 with 5 RBI. And here's the thing. He didn't look that bad at second when he had to play baseball. Like, they had him off the bench a couple of times this series, but he is looking more and more confident at second. He's not going to be a gold glove second baseman. And I don't know that he ever will be. But again, if he can take walks, if he can keep his on-base percentage up, and he keeps hitting those beautiful opposite field home runs, he can stay on this roster all day, Dan.
Well, and that home run in game 4 was really crucial. It felt like the home run in the blast playoff game against the Astros, except the Twins actually followed it up with more runs. But it was that spark that he continues to provide for this offense.
Who do you have on your bench, Dan?
I went with Pablo Lopez because he just didn't look great. And this feels weird to put the clear ace of this staff on the bench. But I mean, again, you're playing the White Sox. You would hope that you'd have a little bit better start. Let's hope it's just a blip. But he only going 4 innings is just not what they expect out of their ace. And luckily, it didn't matter. matter, but in a different series, that surely would have mattered.
Well, are you sure he's the ace? I thought it was Chris Paddock.
He's the sheriff. He's different. Oh. Not the ace. Yeah. Sorry.
I always get those ace shooter. You know, it's very confusing, Dan.
Who do you got?
Yeah, I got to go with Kyle Farmer. Big disappointment this season. And early in the season, Rocco was like teasing Farmer about not getting a hit because he didn't get a hit for the first, I don't know, 90 games of the season that we haven't even played yet. But I think that those jokes, Dan, maybe stopped because it stopped being funny a while ago. Farmer is 0 for 7 in this series, 4 strikeouts. He did play all around the place, though. He played some shortstop. He played some third base. He played some second base. But Dan, you have to do more than glove, right? You have to swing the bat. You're not a pitcher. We still need you to take some hacks here. And he just doesn't look good at the plate.
Maybe he's the next guy, you know, to kind of get back on track, because we saw a lot of other guys get back on track and he didn't play that much in this series. But yeah, an OPS of 297. In other organizations, that might be a ticket to a DFA, but it's not going to be, I don't think, with this team. They're paying him too much money. This is too much like Joey Gallo.
Well, don't worry, be happy.
With that, Dan, let's go on to Rocco's Rewind.
Rocco's Rewind.
My only question here, Dan, it's sort of funny actually that neither of us put Larnach as our beast, but Larnach had a great series. But what's confusing to me is there were times for him to pinch in game 3 and Rocco just kept him on the bench. And I don't know if it was maybe a resting strategy and that's why he didn't make his way in. But I really think when you have a guy who's swinging the bat that well, I think you do what you can to give him a couple of plate appearances, don't you, Dan?
Hang on a minute. We could use a pinch.
It was weird. Rocco didn't do that a lot in this series. He was very content to kind of ride the lineup. Even in game 4, it was like once they took a lead, he was like, yeah, let's just see what these guys can do, which is, I think, what kept Larnach in the game at that point. But yeah, I actually kind of have a similar comment, which is I like that they gave Buxton basically half the series off and didn't miss a beat. He has been a picture of health so far, a positive picture of health so far, David. Go figure. To be able to still build in some rest days and get some wins, I do think that's good. I think we can't count on him to be perfectly healthy all year, but he sure is healthy. And by the way, did you see that he actually hustled on that home run? He wasn't going to get hung up like at second, like he did last year.
I am so happy you mentioned that, because it's almost humorous how quick he took out of the box, because you know how much flack he took in the clubhouse and on Twitter. You could tell that Buxton wasn't going to let that happen again.
Well, that's a good segue into the Minnesota moment.
Minnesota moment.
So I went with Buxton's home run in the bottom of the ninth. I was actually at my son's first game of the year, and so it was an exciting moment. He was on the mound, and kind of between his pitches, I'm watching on my phone and seeing Buxton hit this home run. And I think in the context that you mentioned too, with the Timberwolves picking up a win, which I saw a tweet that astounded me, and I forget, I wish I could credit it, but over the last 20 years or something, Minnesota teams have only had 2-0 leads in a playoff series 4 times. 2 of them were the Timberwolves. One of them was Minnesota. And they may have all been I forget what the fourth one was. I don't even think it was the Wild. That was just a cool night, I imagine, in Minneapolis.
I think that's probably the choice. I'm going to take sort of a sentimental good feels moment, and it has to be Willie Castro having a good day on his birthday. I mean, who doesn't enjoy having a good day on your birthday, right? Some guys are down. They don't like to age, Dan. They don't want to think about the passing of time and getting older. And some guys are out there hitting dingers.
I mean, it is a great way to celebrate. And they needed him to do this. He's up to 615 now OPS. He had not been great, but he had another nice hit in game 4 as well. And so this is a positive development here. Even as Correa coming back, to be able to have Castro's bat and his positional flexibility, he made a nice play at short as well, though it may have been the kind of the situation where Correa makes it, you know, easily in stride and Willie Castro has to do quite the reach. But this is a positive development to have a guy. There's some patience, I suppose, that we didn't grant the Twins paid off with this series.
It is the White Sox,
though. I know. That's the thing. It always comes back to that.
And with that, let's go on to Maurer's Musings, Dan.
I just don't know how it can get any better.
Maurer's Musings.
Dan, have the Twins figured something out, or are the White Sox just that bad? And I think my favorite column or tweet or anything that I saw through the course of this series is Aaron Gleeman writing at The Athletic basically said, the White Sox are bad, yes. However, it's worse that they obviously have done no scouting, because all they did was throw fastballs to this Twins team that has proven, if there's one thing the Twins can't do, Dan, it's hit off-speed breaking pitches. They can't do it. It's impossible. Sweepers, sliders, curves. The Twins are absolutely hopeless. But the White Sox came in, they're like, you know what? 92, 93 miles an hour, no break. Let's just keep it in the zone and see what happens. Poor choice, Dan, against a team that desperately needed an optimism boost. And that'll do it, Dan. Meatballs right down the center.
Maybe they thought that the Twins thought that they were going to throw them off-speed pitches. And so then they snuck in fastballs.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
I switched the cup while your back was turned.
That's what I think that they were doing. That's what's so funny. So,
but But seriously, Dan, do you, because I keep playing this through my head all day today after they swept and I was all excited. Yeah, they won four games in a row. I'm really trying to understand, did something happen during this series or is it truly just that they are playing such a historically, I would say like biblically poor baseball team in the big inning, Dan, not good for those White Sox.
I wish I could give you an answer, but we just don't know. You know, we don't know yet.
No, but what, I know we don't know. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Where should my optimism sure. be? I guess I know that we don't know, and we're not going to know until they play the Angels, and the Angels aren't a good baseball team either, Dan. But so right now, if you had to say at the end of this four-game sweep, do you think the Twins took a step forward here, or do you think the White Sox are just that bad?
You know, we have a whole segment now about this with the grades, David, with the advanced retreat.
It's a different question.
I'll answer your question. I do think that this was definitely the Twins played better too, undoubtedly, right? They had hits in the clutch. It's not like, I mean, these are professional major league players. They're playing for a major league baseball team. So yes, I do think this is good, but if nothing else, it's at least in their head that it was them, right? They should be telling themselves, hey, we played better. This has nothing to do with the level of competition.
Do you think, Dan, that the Twins wake up every morning now and they look in the mirror and they say to themselves, we're good enough. We're smart enough. We know how to play baseball.
I sure hope they do. I hope they were doing that the whole time.
What do you have for your musing, Dan?
So you referenced some of the lefty issues that I think that this team has right now. And Okert has not pitched well as a lefty out of the bullpen. But, you know, Kyle Funderburk has pitched quite well. So my question for you, are we seeing the changing of the guard from Caleb Thielbar, who's getting up there in his mid to late 30s, are we seeing a change of the guard from him to Funderburk, or is it too early to say?
I think it's a bit early. I mean, Thielbar, he had a weird ramp up because he started on the IL. He hasn't looked great yet, but historically, Thielbar's been pretty good. And I don't think you just lose that. Like, I know that you can decline with age. I do think that he's still sort of working through his spring training right now, Dan. So I don't know that we're seeing a changing of the guard quite yet, but I do think it wouldn't hurt for Thielbar to get some more low leverage opportunities so he can sort of figure it out again.
I guess that'll be the cue is, does Rocco change their usage? And we'll see.
We will. Let's go on here, Dan, to series grades.
Series grades.
The segment I've been waiting for. You asked about this. You walked right into this. Yes, as far as my advance retreat, this was a big advance. This is the 10 out of 10. And I'm sorry, anytime you sweep a team in four games, you have to get a 10 out of 10, don't you?
Yeah, I was talking to a buddy at work, and he was very optimistic about this. And he just said, hey, four-game series, even against bad teams, especially divisional opponents, to win all four is a really good outcome. I mean, it shouldn't be expected. And like, even though the team is poor, four games is still four wins.
Absolutely. And then as far as well-played baseball, I just like to the aggressiveness. I know that you highlighted the Vasquez, you know, throw to try to get the guy at second. I don't think that was wise, but it was at least aggressive and showed some confidence. They also ran the bases pretty well. So I gave them a 10 out of 10 there. And so if you take 10 plus 10 out of 20, so 20 out of 20, you cut it in half. That's 10 out of 10. That's an A, David.
Also known as 1 out of 1, Dan.
I could have reduced it all the way down.
Yeah, so I gave them an A also. I mean, you have to. Four games. I think, honestly, had it been a three-game sweep, I might have given them a B just because the White Sox are that bad. I'm sort of joking. Honestly, anytime you get a sweep, you should get an A. And like you said, they didn't really play bad baseball. There weren't a ton of times this series where I thought, well, even if they win this, they don't really deserve to win this. And like game two, I thought was going to be a loss for sure. So to see them come through, like you mentioned, with hits in the clutch, is just, it's a great thing to see this team do, to sort of prove to themselves that they can do it, Dan, because they are good enough. They are strong enough. They are baseball players.
Let's go on here. Let's look around the league in Herbie's headline.
I don't know, Jack. It looked like Herbeck pulled him off the bag.
Herbie's headlines.
Can I just say, sometimes I think our episodes are lacking when the Twins perform as well as they did this series, Dan, because we're not upset at the team. We're not really upset at each other. We're just in a good place because the team is winning. So let's see if we can get a little bit of fire going here in Herbie's headlines. So we're going to start, first of all, with the Rockies, Dan. They have a walk-off home run taken away against the Mariners on a fan interference call. So it's a ball hit deep left field, and the fan reaches out over the bar, which, again, as a fan, that's a no-no, and he touches the fielder. So, Dan, it's not just fan interference and like it's a ground rule double or something. In this instance, no, that's an out. So a walk-off win taken away by fan interference becomes an out? My goodness, Dan.
That feels weird to me. It feels like there should be some common sense here because was it going to go out?
Yeah, it was probably going to be a home run. I don't know that there's any way that we can say for sure. I ain't no physics major, Dan. I can tell you that much. I don't really understand the physics of the baseball, but it did look to me like it was going to be a home run.
Yeah, I mean, that is a bummer. Like you noted here, you know, we got to hope that the Rockies don't miss the postseason by one game, but I don't think that's going to be a problem.
No. I wrote that note thinking, well, no, they're not going to be anywhere near the postseason at the end of the season, but it is sort of funny to think about.
That segues well into the other story we're going to look at here is Aaron Boone getting ejected after the umpire thinks that Aaron Boone was saying something bad about him after the fact, and it's just the fan behind him. And the funniest thing is that the camera is on Aaron Boone the whole time, and Aaron Boone, then he goes out and he says a few choice words for the umpire, but like, this was crazy, and the umpire's explanation was wacky, right? Like, it didn't make a lot of sense. He basically said, well, Aaron Boone's in charge of that dugout, and I heard something from the dugout, so it was his fault. Weirdest thing.
Well, okay, so if you watch John Boy's breakdown of this, it's fantastic. I mean, John Boy videos are a must watch, any video that comes out, but in this particular instance, he does some great lip reading, of course, as he always does, but there are hot mics that catch almost all of this interaction. Mm-hmm. And the best part, Dan, is Boone's upset because he's getting tossed after he was quiet, after the ump told him to be quiet, and all the fan said was like, let's go home plate. Like, that's all he said. Like, it wasn't like this very vulgar rant towards the home plate umpire. That's not what happened. But the best part of this interaction is Boone comes out and he's like, it wasn't me. And he's like, he's upset now. And now he's just going after everybody. But the best part is when he says to the ump, I didn't say anything. It was in the stands. And the ump just goes, you're probably right, Aaron. that's like, you know, when you're dealing with someone who's really upset, like having a calming, like to acquiesce to whatever they're demanding, like will oftentimes make them more upset. So Boone, like his head just blows up. And he is so up. He goes, you bet I'm right. He's just screaming at the end. He goes, what do you mean probably right? No, I'm right. And it's absolutely fantastic and hilarious. And just the way that the home plate ump is like, yeah, you're probably right about that.
I will say, as a teacher, I've totally done that. Right, where like I yell at the wrong student for something, and it doesn't matter. I'm irked for something else, you know, often. So it's I sympathize, I guess, with all parties involved here.
Well, and then I do want to note Third Chair Hoags, who's a host of the show from time to time, he sent a note about Sonny Gray. So Sonny Gray is currently 2-1 with a 1.04 ERA and a 0.87 whip, Dan.
Yeah, that's the starter the Twins wish they had, I think. If only we had a front office who wanted to pay him. So good on him for the Cardinals. I guess we'll see him at some point this year.
Well, with that, Dan, let's go on here to Puckett's Picks.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
Puckett's Picks.
Twins are on the road against the Angels, Dan, and the listeners are going to take Kepler off the board. Hoag's picks next, so he takes Jeffers, and then it'll go to you.
I'm like, there's so many options now. I suppose in this situation, it makes the most sense to just stick with Buxton.
Wow. Okay. Well, I get Larnick. I did not foresee Larnick dropping all the way down to me.
Because they're not going to throw him fastballs. They're going to throw him off speed pitches. He's going to strike out 6 times. You just wait. You're going to have a -4
matter,
score
Dan.
For
the
this
confidence
series.
That he has gained from playing the White Sox and waking up every morning and looking in the mirror and saying, I am Trevor Larnick. I am a professional baseball player. I can hit off speed pitches. No, Dan, he's the man.
Well, and none of us picked Eddie Julian, so I think maybe we're all going to look pretty dumb, I think, by the end when Eddie Julian has a couple more home runs. Well, David, this was really enjoyable to be able to talk about a positive series. Let's hope that the Twins can build this momentum and maybe take a series in California, because then you know what awaits them right after that is another series with the White Sox in Chicago. Pretty fun.
Let's just see how many times we can play the White Sox to get this team back up to 500, Dan.
Well, folks, if you like what you hear, please tell a friend. You can follow us on X at Min for the Win. You can find our Min for the Win Facebook and Instagram pages. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on your favorite platform so you're notified when new episodes are available. And if you'd leave us a rating or a like, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you'd like to support the show further, you can find us on Patreon. The link is in the description. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Twins. That'll wrap up another episode of Min for the Win, a podcast hosted by David Kubas and Dan Thompson, two avid fans who appreciate well-played baseball, especially when it's done by the Twins. Thanks so much for listening, and as always, go Twins!